Let's rock.
Let's rock.
Episode 80.
Oh, nice.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, closing in.
Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point, and the point of today's episode, episode 80, is Hayden Grove, a beloved singer who competed on season 27 of The Voice and is known for his traditional, jazzy Rat Pack sound. Someone with steadfast devotion to Cleveland and a firm advocate of mental health initiatives, Hayden Grove, welcome to the show.
Thank you. That was a lovely intro. I appreciate that. Thank you. I've had a lot of intros in my day. You did your homework. It's always good to do your homework.
Thank you.
It's good. Yeah.
You got to be prepared, right?
Yeah.
People deserve it. So
people deserve it. And we're just going to go off on a tangent right away.
I love
it. Like details, people just miss details all the time. And it's not like I actually care about like, if you spell my name right, it's just a little sign of disrespect, right? Like I would never spell someone's name wrong. Like there's, you know, I get put on a lot of like AI flyers and like my name will be spelled wrong. And like, okay, like I really don't care. But it's just like, if I was a business owner, I would never want anything spelled wrong. Like totally. I've been to restaurants where like, this is spelled wrong or this is spelled wrong. All my friends in my group chat, they like spell things wrong. I'm like, stop spelling things wrong. Just take the time to figure it out. Anyways, that's my little grammar thing, but go on.
No, but it speaks to a deeper truth, Hayden, too, even beyond just grammar. I think the attention to detail and being specific shows that you have the care, you have the intention of making something right and doing it well.
That's my dad. I learned that from my dad. Like my dad is the most detail oriented, like specific, like every detail matters. Every detail there's care behind every detail. And like, it's not about yourself. Like, again, I don't care if you spell a name. You can call me whatever you want. You can spell my name wrong. But just like, if I'm a business owner, if I'm putting something out there, for somebody else, that's when I care. Like if I was on the Chats with Joe Clark podcast and I spelled your name J-O, I would just be mortified. I'd be, you know, like mistakes happen, but like sometimes people just don't care. And that's my dad cares about every little detail. And I'm grateful that he kind of taught me that, like that every little thing matters for sure.
It does. My mom, like a flip end of it, would always tell us that haste makes waste. So much like your dad saying, pay attention to details, my mom always encouraged us not to rush through things because then it makes waste.
That is my problem though, is that I'm not patient. So okay. A little bit of both. I get the details matter, but also I can be a little impatient.
So while you're impatient, while you do care for the details, mm-hmm. to dive right into it, Hayden, what would you say is the best thing that there is to know about you?
The best thing? Oh, I don't know if there is a best thing to know about me. The best thing? I don't know, man. That's the craziest question I've ever been answered or ever been asked. The best thing about me, I usually just name off all the flaws that I have, you know, this, that, and the other thing. Honestly, my answer would be that I care. I do. I care a lot about a lot of different things. And that comes from my parents and that comes from my family. I do care. I care about people. I care about where I live. I care about myself. I care about my career. I care about a lot of things. So I think actually that was a great segue from like, you know, that little aside to where we are. So I care. I do.
Yeah, that's a great thing. It shows the big heart. And I love the testimony that you're giving to your parents too throughout that.
Yeah, no, I mean, as I said, I kind of just did a Father's Day post. And I also included Mother's Day because I was at sea for Mother's Day. And I called my mom, but it didn't really do enough for her. And so I kind of made it a Mother's and Father's Day, but my parents both cared a lot. They cared. My dad, you know, cared for sick people for 35 years, 40 years pretty much. And, you know, spent all of his time at the hospital and spent all of his time, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning, gets a call, you know, hey, this patient's not doing well. We need to go in or you need to come in. And he, you know, he's up and at him. So he cared immensely. And then my mom cared for the three of us kids. I have a younger brother and a younger sister. And she was basically the only caretaker because my dad was, you know, helping everybody else. So care is a huge word for me. And I think that like, sometimes it's cool not to care, like, oh, I don't care about this, but no, like caring is so essential. And both my parents were just such tremendous caregivers in their own way.
Man, they sound consistent with it too.
Yeah.
You know, Hayden, that's another big thing. It's sometimes easier to care once, but if you consistently care, that's laborious.
My mom consistently cares too much. I love her. I love her, but she's a worrier. That's where I get the worriness from. My mom cares consistently too much all the time. Sometimes I'm like, okay, just not everything is a huge deal. It's just, you know, but it's because she cares. It's because she loves us and because she, you know, she wants to be taken care of. So, consistency and care is a huge thing for sure.
One of the things with which you care about and tying into that worry mm-hmm. piece is the mental health
world. Yeah.
I want to read a quote that you put on your Instagram story recently. Cool. You posted your story, quote, "Take your mental health the most seriously, but never take yourself too seriously."
Yes.
So what does this mean to you, Hayden?
It means that you have to have fun. You have to enjoy life. If you can't, like, it means that, like, if you're worried about what other people think, and I've had the hardest time because, as we mentioned, I care about the details and I care immensely what people think. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you, be like, no, I don't care what people think. I care immensely what people think, like, all the time. I care that, you know, I care what they think about my appearance. I care what they think about my music. I care what they think about my, you know, my voice. I care what they think about the way I conduct myself. I care about the way that the way that they think that I, you know, handle myself and all that. I care about my, you know, my reputation. I care about my ego, I guess you could say. I care about all of it. So I think I've put that quote out there because I'm really trying to learn to just put myself out there. And if I enjoy it, then who cares? Like, if it's not hurting other people, then just do it. Like, if I, you know, if I post something and it's silly and it's dumb and it's fun, like, then I need to stop caring about it. Like, that's what I was saying is just like, hey, if I can have fun with myself and do something silly and that it, you know, I found joy in, then I'm going to do it. Like, I used to get, when I was doing sports full time, like, I kind of had this secret side of me, which was the music side. And I was really, like, just scared to put myself out there. Cause, you know, I just didn't want people to make fun of me and, you know, to, you know, laugh at me, and they still do. And that's fine. But that's kind of where I'm saying is that, like, now I'm okay with it because I feel like I'm being my authentic self. I'm feeling like I'm confident enough in myself to put myself out there. But still, there are times where I put myself out there and somebody will say something snarky and it'll get to me. So I kind of try to remind myself, like, you know, as long as your mental health is in a good place, as long as you're happy, as long as you're joyful, as long as you're just put it out there and who cares what people think, like, just have a good time. Life is not that serious. Like, enjoy yourself. If you look stupid in a video, if you look silly, you do something dumb, again, if you're not hurting anybody, then just be okay with it.
I think it's a great point too, because you're living out your actual self and what you're loving to do. So for someone that's maybe out there putting out that snarky comment, it's kind of almost oxymoronic, right? Like, you're saying you're not taking yourself too seriously by doing what you're actually wanting to do.
Right.
And they're out there just putting hate out there and they're probably not doing what they really want to be doing. It's
right.
Completely oxymoronic.
Yeah, it is oxymoronic. And it's just interesting because I do get a lot of, you know, I get a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot. I do get some just like blowback, you know, you get some people. And I really had a tough time for a long time with that. And then I realized, you know what, I get to sing songs for a living, man. People think, I've had this recently where, like, you know, I still love sports. I'm still a huge cat. Like, I grew up a huge fan of the Cavs, Browns, Guardians, Buckeyes, right? And then I went into journalism and I kind of had to put the fandom away. Well, now that I'm not doing journalism anymore, I'm a fan again. And it's fun, man. I love it. And now I can just kind of throw things out there without caring about, like, you know, the journalistic repercussions of everything. But people will, like, say, like, you know, you're an idiot. Go sing your songs is if it's like an insult. I'm like, I will gladly go sing my song. That's what I do for a living. I get to go sing songs that I love to sing and I get to bring people joy. And that's such a wonderful blessing that God has given me. And, so yeah, I just have to be reminded that the thing that I think about all the time is that if people are bringing out hatred, it's probably because they have some things in their life that they're not happy with and they're not enjoying. And I pray for them because I know how that feels. And I know that that it's tough. So again, I try not to take it too seriously, but at the end of the day, I still am sensitive. My mom would say you're way too sensitive. And I would say I'm getting better.
Yeah, it's a journey. It's totally a journey. Yeah. One way or the other,
for sure.
People that are overly sensitive or people that aren't sensitive enough, right? It's definitely a journey.
No, it is a journey. And sorry to go on, but like, it's something that I've dealt with my whole life. Like, I played sports growing up. I was a football player, I was a baseball player, I was a basketball player. Like, and people just kind of expect you to be a jock. Like, okay, you're a jock. That's the box they want to put you in. But then, like, I had this other side of me that, like, I really loved music and I loved, you know, the big band stuff and I loved singing. And like, when I brought one into the other, like if I brought the singing into the sports, you know, the guys would call me all kinds of names and make fun of me. And like, okay, that's kind of how I developed my tough skin. But then on the other side, like the music people didn't understand the sports aspect either. So it just kind of like never felt like I was like fully embraced by anybody. Cause like, oh, well, he's this, but he's also that. So it's just kind of weird, but it also has helped me to kind of learn to just do what I love to do and let everything else be what it is.
And how cool, right? To have both ends of it. For our audience, if you can't tell, Hayden's very tall. How tall are you?
6'3".
Yeah. I mean, Hayden's like a tall figure, right? So the athletic side, you could tell, is there. And then the voice is tremendous. So to have both sides of it, like, it's almost like you're playing them both. And to have that is greatly unique.
Yeah. It was a blessing. You know, I loved like in the summer, I just reminded in the summertime, you know, kids these days, they have their iPads. We didn't really have that growing up.
Totally.
Like, you know, we had maybe a Game Boy, but like we would just play outside all day long. And like, that's how we got good at sports. It wasn't like we went to this academy and we trained, you know, we just played and played and played all the time. And so I loved it. I loved that.
Yeah. You'd replicate the heroes of the athletic world.
Sure, man. I was pointing the bat like Jim Tomey, like every day. That was my thing. I had the high socks like Jim Tomey in my head, and like the bat point in the yard, I was like LeBron. Obviously I wasn't LeBron, but you know, like shooting baskets, I'm like LeBron 4-3 winner, you know?
Yes, yeah, exactly. You get to emulate it that way.
Yes. And
the creative realm is endless with that, which I love.
Yeah, no, it is creative. It is creative. Like, I remember being a kid and like, I'd be outside for hours on end, but sometimes I'd be alone. And like, I would just like create situations in my mind. Like, I pretend like I was doing like a documentary, like about like, you know, whoever I was emulating. And like, I was doing interviews like this, you know, pretending it was like a thing. And then like, I would go out and play and like replicate in my mind, like, oh, what did you go through on this play? It was just being a kid's fun, man. It's a good time.
It is. You know, I think the joy that we experience as kids is something that maybe dwindles throughout life, but I think you're one of those people who really captures and keeps it alive. Like, you have a great energy that you exude, which is part of the reason that really I wanted to sit down. I'm grateful for this opportunity.
Oh, thanks, man.
And while we're talking about that childhood piece, tying it in with the singing, you started taking lessons around third grade, right?
If I'm
correct. Mm-hmm. How did you know, or how did you feel like this was a desire of yours at roughly, call it 10 years old?
That's a phenomenal question. So I grew up, my dad was a doctor for, you know, as I said, 40 years. But he also grew up singing and grew up musical and playing piano in the church, kind of mostly a church thing, but he was part of my grandmother is musical, and you know, my dad would kind of sing me to sleep when I was a baby, and just always had music playing in the house, all kinds of different stuff. Like, and I always was singing. Like, my sister just kind of digitized a bunch of our home movies, and I've been watching them. And like, my dad would be like, "Hey, and sing this song," and I just start singing it. And he'd be like, "Now sing this song," and I start singing it. So I think I just had a general love for singing and music. And I was no good at playing anything. I originally started taking piano lessons and I couldn't play. Like, I was horrible. All I could play was like, you know, what I could hear. And I was good at playing by ear, but I couldn't play. So my dad was like, "Well, why don't you take voice lessons?" I was like, "Yes, that's what I want to do." So that's what I did. I took singing lessons from the time I was in third or fourth grade. And I loved it. I really did. I loved it.
It is. It's so special when it's tied in from that family notion too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It like adds to it.
I remember hearing my dad sing, and like, my dad's got a really deep, like, singing voice, beautiful, you know, this voice. And like, I was just like, man, like, I wish I could sound like that one day. And then one day, you know, your voice changes and you're like, oh wait, I do sound like that now. That's awesome.
What did you guys listen to?
So that's a phenomenal question. So my parents had a chest of CDs, and it was literally not everything. They didn't have like, you know, modern hip hop and rap and stuff, but they had like a ton. Like, it ranged from like John Philip Sousa marches to like, to Pavarotti, to like Bruce Springsteen, to like the 60s, 70s, like Fleetwood Mac, to Stevie Wonder, to, you know, to Frank Sinatra, to Ella Fitzgerald, to, you know, there was just all kinds of stuff. And I just listened to everything, and it just, it, I'm very grateful that I listened to so much old music to realize how good it was. Old, like before all the technology got involved, like you had to go into a room, you had to do it live. And like, it was, they made magic, man. Like no matter what the genre was, they made magic. And you know, it's not really like that anymore. It's just kind of a shame. I mean, we do try to emulate that, but you know, technology is good too. There are good parts of it, but totally. I'm just saying like the old, like it just used to be real. Like you couldn't fake it. Like now you can fake it. Mm-hmm. Like you can have a singer, you can have a beautiful person that, you know, can't sing worth a lick, but you can just change this and that. And like, oh, they're a pop star. Like, which is cool. Like, again, if you love to do that and you have art, like, or you have creativity, fine. But like, at the same time, you couldn't fake it back in the day. Like if you're getting up to that microphone, you had, that would be your voice. There weren't any Pro Tools or Auto Tune or any of this stuff. Like you had to be able to sing. So yeah, but yeah, I listen to everything.
And that's, do you think that had an influence on the sound that you were trying to create? Or do you think it was maybe more so your dad with that deep voice? Because I think like something that enamors me a little bit, Hayden, about your story and your style is that it's not the pop star on stage or it's not the sound of, you know, Van Halen and these rock artists where you picture like a rock star or even like a country cowboy. It's none of those that I think maybe people who, like if you're dreaming, I want to be a singer, like I think they often look at that, but you're just so different. I think that's so interesting.
Yeah. Honestly, it was kind of everything. Michael Bublé was such a massive influence on me. Like I just, cause I'd listened to that music and I'd listened to it in like movies. Like whenever it would come on in a movie, like, do you remember The Parent Trap?
Yeah.
Like that's where I first heard L-O-V-E by Nat King Cole. Mm-hmm. And that was like, that song, I love that song. And then I didn't know like who sang it or where it came from. And then I started to like research. And then Michael came along and like was this young guy that was doing that music. And I was like, oh, this is the best, because he was such a role model and such an influence for me. Because he was young and he was cool and like, or he looked, you know, he had like the suit on, he looked cool and he like, he wasn't a pop star, but he just, I don't know. It just, it really enamored me what he was able to do. So yeah, I never got into, I really do think it's divine intervention. I don't think it's my dad. I just think that like God was like, this is what you're going to do. This is the music you're going to love. And this is, there's nothing you can do about it. I literally just fell in love with it. That sound, it's really hard to describe. And my voice just kind of happened to mesh with it.
Sure.
So, I would say it was a combination. Like my dad had that kind of deeper sound, but also, you know, I didn't like the sound of pop singer. Like, it's not that I didn't like the sound. I liked the music, but I didn't, when you're listening to their voices, I wasn't like blown away.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was blown away by like Andrea Bocelli and Josh Groban and Frank Sinatra and Michael Bublé and all the, you know, the real, like the singers. And I was like, okay, these guys, that's how you sing. So I think that like it, that kind of just did it for me.
But you nailed it too. I mean, what Bublé can do, or like Andre, you like that range and the ability to fluctuate and hit all these notes. I'm like, how do you just transition from hitting that crazy note to then just like extending it for an eon?
Yeah, it's
incredible.
People, yeah, the voice is really a wonderful thing. It really is. It's just I feel really blessed to be able to sing even a little bit, because it just like I think Michael said one time, like, we make magic, like it's magic. Like you don't have you're making music with just something that God gave you. There's nothing else. There's no, like, you can't go out and order a better instrument and like, and like, you know, oh, a new high quality this, or like a new, or even like violins with, they're really old, they're really good. Like you can't just go buy it. It's you. It's just you. Like it's a blessing.
So raw.
Yeah.
So Hayden, so you're taking vocal lessons, you're growing up.
Yep.
Going through high school, you end up going to the University of Miami.
Yeah.
Studying jazz in the music program in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
How did you know? So you were playing sports. You mentioned earlier that there was some friction there. Like there's one side of you that was singing. There was one side of you that was in the athletics. Obviously you go all in the sense that you go to school to study it.
Yeah. Joe, I got to tell you, I've done a lot of podcasts in my day and I have never seen anyone as prepared. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you, Hayden. That's
awesome. It's so cool to see that. Like, again, I'm not like asking you to kiss my ass or anything, and you can leave this in, but like again, a lot of times it's just like, so what do you do? Where are you from? And it's like, you took the time to like look through my, and I just, it's just appreciated. So yeah,
thank you.
You do keep it up. That's thank awesome. You. Yeah. So I went to the University of Miami my freshman year. And I went for music because, you know, I played sports, but I wasn't good enough to like D1. Like I was not at that level. Probably because I didn't care as much as I cared about music. Like I just wanted the, I wouldn't say the, I don't know. I just loved playing the game. Like I didn't want to, yeah. I didn't really care about like being the best at it. Like I hated working out, like okay. lifting. Like I like to run, like running, but like I hated, like my friends, like my football friends were like all about protein and lifting. I'm like, dude, I don't want to, I just want to go throw the football and out 2 hours a day. I don't care about lifting.
Sure.
I understand that's part of it. But anyways, so I love sports, but yeah, I wanted to do music. I told my parents, I was like, okay, I don't want to go to college. I want to go and I just wanted to try this thing. Like, and my parents were like, no, that's not happening. If you want us to support you, like, no, you're going to college. Like they spent a lot of their hard earned money. My dad spent a lot of the hard earned money on, you know, what has become one of the, premier schools in America from a high school. Like my school was pre-K through 12. And it is currently, I mean, it's not the same school I went to 15 years ago. It's changed a lot, but it's one of the premier schools in the United States. And like, you can look at any metric and you'll see it. It's right there. It's because they just wanted to give me the best opportunity possible to do whatever I wanted to do.
What school was it in?
It was Pinecrest School in okay. Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Yeah. It's a preparatory school. It's a private school. And I think Leo Messi's kids go there now because he's FC Miami. Mm-hmm. Barron Trump was supposed to go, but it didn't. Scottie Pippen's kids were there.
Heck yeah.
Jeff Conine's kid. I don't know if you know who Jeff Conine is. But yeah, it's for lack of a better word, it's an elite school. And that's a whole, we could have spent an hour on that conversation because I never felt like I belonged in that environment. Like I always felt like a Midwest kind of just normal kid. I didn't feel like I was elite in any, because we weren't. My parents are both kind of like, middle class, like, you know, Midwest people. And I just never felt like I fit. But anyways, so they're like, okay, we spent all this money. So you could have the best future possible. Like we wanted to do this for you. We don't want you throwing that away just to chase a dream. That's going to be hard. Like we're not saying we don't believe in you, but like get the degree. So you have, if it doesn't work out, then have a backup plan. So I was like, all right, well, if I'm going to go to school, then I'm going to study music at school. And they were like, oh, fine, that's cool. I was like, okay, cool. So I did that, studied music for 1 year at University of Miami and realized that no, I can't, like, we spoke about the mental health thing. Like my mental health was kind of just beginning to start to kick back up, but it was still bad. And I was just like, this is not, it was a really toxic and competitive environment. Like nothing against the, you know, the faculty, but it just, I don't know, something about music school just brings out the worst in people. Mm. And I've heard that across the board from, you know, whether it's University of Miami, whether it's Berkeley, whether it's NYU, whether it's Juilliard, just it's really competitive. And I just was like, okay, I'm not this kind of person. So I'm just not doing this. But my grandpa, you know, was right over here in Brecksville and raised me to be a Buckeye. And I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to go to Ohio State. That's what I want to do. I'm going to study journalism. I'm going to get back to my sports and I'm going to do that. And I did. So, that's kind of how that went. But that year at University of Miami, it's still, you know, it was so interesting and, you know, I'm glad I took it and, glad I did it, but I think I just needed to go.
I can understand a little bit of that in the music school, just from a person that's not involved in it, maybe being very cutthroat because to your point, it is very competitive in the music industry in general, let alone if you take some people that who are interested in it or believe they have some talent and you throw them in a room and say, now we're really competitive. I could see that.
That's what it was, man. That's what it was. It was like, you know, our program, the jazz vocal program at University of Miami had like six people. Like it was very elite. Like the fact that I got in was a big deal. And like the fact that I was part of it was a big deal. You know who was my class, by the way? I don't think I've ever I've never mentioned this on a podcast. Do you watch Summer House?
No.
You know what Summer House is?
No.
Oh.
I'm terrible with this
stuff. You don't?
Okay. See, do you know Summer House?
Do you know Summer House? Okay. Okay. Do you know who Jesse Solomon is? Have you ever seen this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know Jesse Solomon? Yeah. Okay, cool. He was in my class, University of Miami.
What?
Yeah, yeah. We were the only two dudes. It was me and him. We were the jazz male singers at the University of Miami.
That's cool.
Yeah, right.
That's so cool.
But at the time, he was just this goofy, like, he had a big afro. He's just this goofy kid from Chicago. And all the girls loved him. Like, he's goofy looking. What do you love him for? Like, what's,
yeah, I don't do get you not it. See me?
Right. No, it's not me. Like, kidding. I was like, I'm no, I was like, I just didn't get the allure. I was like, he's just tall and lanky and goofy. And they're just like, oh, he's so hot. I'm like, okay. But then he like turned that into like, I think he ended up leaving the program and then turning that into a reality TV career, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And, but now he's singing and releasing albums and stuff. So it's, we kind of recently reconnected on like social media and like, it's just so cool that we're both doing it.
Yeah.
Like it's even me much smaller scale, but like, we're still doing it when like we both left.
Right.
Or we both like weren't involved in it. So anyways, yeah, it was just super competitive. Me and Jesse know, like we weren't competitive, but I just think like the whole thing, the vibe was just competitive.
Jesse and you are the worst sales pitch for that program because you both were in, shows the skill, and both left and are now crushing it.
Yeah. So I would say I'm crushing pitch. It. I would say I'm trying.
You are doing.
I appreciate it. So, yeah. But they have a lot of great alumni, like a lot of legendary alumni. And that maybe not in the vocal program so much, but in the actual jazz program, they have a lot of like really, really fantastic people. So they can focus on them if they want the endorsement.
So you come up to Ohio State, you're a Buckeye doing the journalism.
Yeah.
You end up going that sports route.
Yeah.
Again, going back in this fickle, this back and forth teeter totter that you're kind of balancing. How was that career for you? And what did you think were maybe some of the big takeaways from that eventually led you to get back to the music?
Yeah. I was just immensely lucky. I got into it and I think in that industry, the harder you work, the more you're going to, like, whatever you do, like if you just work hard, you can make it. You don't have to be, I mean, for lack of, you don't have to be that talented. You don't have to be that like smart. You don't have to be that. You just have to have like work ethic. And that's what I loved about it, is that like, I didn't have to be the smartest guy in the room. I didn't have to like know all the answers to the test. I just had to outwork everybody else. Like that is what I'm good at. Like, I'm not the most talented guy. I'm not the most, smart guy. I'm not the most like, you know, creative guy, but I'm the guy that is willing to do things that other people won't do because I just love the work and I love what I do. So I got really lucky, man. Like basically I got to Ohio State, was in the journalism program, and there was this ad in the school paper for like, to be on the student TV station. And like, I had some experience in high school and I had done a couple things like in college, even like outside of Miami, just on my own. And, I just submitted my resume and like they interviewed me and they were like, you know, we think you're underqualified, but also like, we think you're going to work, you're going to do more than anybody else will do. So we're going to give you the opportunity. And I was like, you won't regret it. And sure enough, like, you know, I spent 3 years busting my butt and got to cover Ohio State football, got to cover Ohio State basketball, got to cover Ohio State baseball, and got to cover, you know, all kinds of cool stuff. You know, being around Urban Meyer in that program, my senior year, they won the national championship. So we got to cover the Sugar Bowl. We got to cover the national championship game. And that was one of the worst times of my life, by the way. I was mentally just in a horrible place. And, because I just worked myself to death. I really did. And, but again, looking back, you know, that's not what I remember from the national. I remember we won the national championship game and like, that was a good mental health day. That was a great mental health day for me. I was very happy about that. But yeah, like I just got really lucky. And then, you know, coming to Cleveland, this is where I knew I wanted to be. I did not want to be anywhere else. So I was like, I'll work the grunt jobs just to stay in Cleveland. And it's kind of what I did. I started covering the Indians and the Browns for this. It used to be called scout.com. And I used to get paid nothing. I got paid nothing, but I was lucky enough to where my aunt and uncle let me stay with them. And, I just, again, just worked my butt off and finally got some notice from Cleveland.com. And, they were like, hey, we think, you know, we want to find a spot for you. And I did. So, and again, once I got to Cleveland.com, immediately very lucky, like the Cavs won the championship that summer. I wasn't with Cleveland.com yet, but I was covering the Cavs as well for this other site. So that Cavs won the championship my first year doing professional journalism, which, okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Indians in the World Series, game 7. I'm sitting there at Progressive Field, like we're one swing away from winning the World Series. So that's my first year in journalism. Then, like, you know, the 8 years after that, it's like, you know, just the Browns had some good, like, their first playoff season, 2020 was cool. And, you know, covered a lot of cool events, like All-Star games and, you know, playoff games. And I just, and when the voice happened, and when I knew, like, I couldn't make a decision, my decision was just like, I'd done everything I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Like, okay. it had nothing to do with not being happy. I was happy, but like, I just, there was no challenge left. I did everything I wanted to do, like literally everything, because I just got lucky.
Well, you worked hard.
Well, yeah.
And but once you work hard, I think people.
But even then, you can work hard and you can never see a, like, Mary Kay has been on the Browns beat for 37 years. She's never seen a Browns team get to the, you know, get to a Super Bowl. And neither is anybody else for that matter. But, you know, you get what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
It's just, I just got lucky that, like, those two teams specifically. And people ask me all the time, like, why did you do it? I'm like, I just did everything I wanted to do. I wanted to, you know, go full feet into this music thing. And I was like, I'm not waiting on the Browns. I'm not waiting on the Browns, because who knows how long that's going to be.
Do you think that all those successes, almost the team successes, I mean, in yours, in congruence with,
yeah.
Do you think that that added maybe some resolve for you in a way of like, okay, I can close a sports chapter now,
easily.
And just become the fan and dive
it.
In.
That yeah. was it.
Because, and you mentioned The Voice, which we're going to get to in a second. During this time too, you started posting on TikTok and social media,
yeah.
right? You singing, kind yeah. of putting yourself back out there and really maybe getting the ball moving in that direction a little bit too.
Yeah.
So there was that longing innately there as well.
Oh, it was always there. It was always there. I still listened to everything. I still went, I'll tell you the story. I don't think I've ever, this might be a joke. This might be a Chats with Clark exclusive. Maybe not. I went, so I covered the NFL Combine, which was in Indianapolis.
Okay.
And I had tickets to see Buble in Detroit. So I was like, all right. I literally drove 4 hours from Indianapolis to Detroit to see Buble and drove back in the same night just to get back to the NFL Combine that day. People don't know. I still love the music that, like, I still listen to everything. And like, he is like, again, he's like the guy that, you know, was doing it on a big, big scale.
Yeah.
Like, so I had tickets. I'm like, I'm going, like, I'm not going. So I think I left at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Everything's kind of done for the day. Got there at 7, show was at 8, show ended at 11, got back at like 3 or 4 in the morning, and then was up at work for, you know, 8 o'clock, because like, I'm not, that's how much I love the music. I'm like, I'm not, this is not like a, oh, it's okay, I'll just let them. No, it's like, I gotta be there.
And that says something.
Yeah.
Just that kind of commitment.
Right. Something. But even then, like, so when I got here in 2015, 2016, I met Mike Patrone, who is a piano player at Johnny's downtown. And he kind of reignited, like, hey, like, I thought I was done with music after Miami. I was like, okay, my time with music's over. It's, you know, I had a good run. I always love it. Like, I'll always love it, but I'm never going to sing again. But then, like, I don't know, but then you just do because you love it. And like, I would just send, like, I remember I recorded like a song for my dad or something, just because he'll love music. And then I was like, I guess I'm just going to keep doing stuff like this for the rest of my life. But yeah, but then I met Mike and he was like, you got to get out there. Like, you're very good and you need to like do it. And I'm like, well, what do you mean do it? How do I do it? He's just like, just put yourself, like, keep making videos, like, just put yourself out there and people will notice, and or come along with me, like, come along and gig with me. Like, I don't want to make this political, but like, in 2016 we hosted the Republican National Convention, and you know, at the time we thought like, oh, Donald Trump's running, ha ha ha, like, it'll be fun. And like, so we did like a gig at, like, for all the Republicans, you know, and he and I sang with him, and it wasn't about the political at the time. Like, you know, now I try to avoid political stuff because I just, you know, I sing.
And, you want to sing?
Yeah, I just want to sing. But back then it was just like, oh, I get the opportunity to sing, I'll play anywhere.
Absolutely.
So he took me to stuff like that. But then like, he'd be like, oh, there's a wedding I'm doing, come with me, sing with me. Or there's an event that I'm doing for this and come sing with me. So like, that's just slowly word of mouth. But then I was still trying to juggle the sports world too. And it just, you know, it just kind of got more and more, like, the music just slowly kept like getting more and more. And then COVID happened, which was a nightmare for all of us, but also the biggest blessing. Cause that's when I was like, you know what? We're bored. There's nothing to do. I'm just going to start posting on TikTok, because why not? Like, but I was, as we mentioned earlier, like, I was scared of it. Like I was scared. Like I was scared the people on Twitter were going to find it and like, you know, post me and like start laughing, you know. I'm still sensitive, but then, you know, I didn't have like a massive following, but like I had like 30,000 people, which isn't nothing. And, but yeah, but then Michael found me on, things kind of blew up from there.
Yeah. I'm curious about all that. Yeah. So you had like a couple different situations happen with Boo Boy. So yeah. Longtime fan.
Yeah.
And then
I'll tell you the real story. I tell it sometimes. You want to hear the real story?
Hit me. Okay. Absolutely.
Do you like Christmas ale? Are you a beer drinker?
Yeah. I like Christmas ale. Yeah. I mean, good for like one or two of them. Oh, I can't do okay. like.
Beautiful. You're gonna beautifully understand. All right. So I was at Bar Louie at Crocker Park, which was a hangout for a long time.
By the way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I do and I don't. Was at Bar Louie at Crocker Park, and it was Christmas time, and you know, probably four Christmas sales in.
Yeah. Like, for our audience, if you're unfamiliar, yeah. Christmas sales like a 9-10%
beer. Yeah, yeah.
They pack a punch.
Yeah, not like just watching football, just probably three or four in. And just like listening to the music. Like they're, you know, they're playing Christmas music. And I know that Michael's a lot more than Christmas, but like they're playing his music and I was just like, man, like, dude, I love that dude. Like he's done like he's liked a couple of my videos. Like I love it. And I'm just like, you know what? F it. Or no, this was maybe before TikTok. But anyway, I was like, F it. Like, I'm just going to tell him like how much like his music means to me. Cause I was like feeling good, you know, instead of sending girls DMs all the time, like I'm sending like heartfelt messages to like my heroes, you know? And, so I was like, Michael, like, you know, I just want to thank you so much for all that you've done for me in my life. Like, you don't even know it, but like, you've gotten me through hard times. Like I was listening to you in the hallways and like, you just made me, you know, really happy when I was really not happy. And your music just brought so much joy to me. And, I just appreciate you so much. And, I woke up the next morning. I was like, what on earth just happened? Like I was not feeling good. You know, I probably had maybe another, I don't know if I had more Christmas ale, but I was like, I woke up the next morning. I was like, oh, you overdid it, buddy. Good job. But then I looked at my phone and he responded. He's like, Hayden, thank you so much. Like, this is why I do it. And, God bless you or whatever. And I was like, man, that's amazing. So, a couple years, maybe a year or so went by and, I got on TikTok, started posting and he got on TikTok, started posting and like, he would like a video here and a video there. And then, like he did this, like question and answer thing. He was coming out with a new album. And they were like sending videos to ask him a question. So I just sent a video like saying like, hey, how do you go about like, you know, picking your song list for an album? Like, how does that go? How does that go? He's like, I know this guy. Like he said it on the video. He's like, I know this guy. He's like, I know this guy. And then he answered the question. I was like, why did he say he knows me? Like from what? And then liked a couple more of my videos and followed me. And, I was blown away by that. And then, you know, just kind of kept liking my videos. But then I went to go see him in Pittsburgh because I think he was in Cleveland, but the Browns were playing the Broncos on Thursday Night Football. So I had to cover the game and I gave my tickets away. I had work I had to do. I had to give them away that time.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, you know, Thursday Night Football, like it's a big deal. I think, do you remember, like, I think Case Keenum was starting or something. But anyway, but then I went to Pittsburgh and I had good tickets and he was singing Home and then he looked out and he's like, everybody, like I recognize this guy in the crowd. His name's Hayden Grove. You got to go follow him on TikTok. He's great. You know, love, you're a beaut. And that's kind of when it started blowing up. The video got like 1.5 million views and like gained like 50,000 followers or 40,000 followers overnight. And it was just dream come true, honestly.
I look out to the audience and there's a kid up here. I think, is it Grove? Hayden Grove? Is that your full name? Is that your name? Hayden Grove, right? That's your full name, right? So Hayden Grove is a guy that I started following on TikTok and I recognize him in the crowd here.
And then from there, it's just been, you know, then the voice happened because, you know, they kind of saw the videos and saw what I did. And,
they being the voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'll get in trouble for this, but I did not audition. Like I wasn't like, hey, I really want to be in the voice. Cause like my whole life, my family was like, you don't have a story. You're a white kid from Florida. You don't have a story. Like you should be blessed. Like you haven't been sick and you haven't been, you know, you're a very blessed child. You should know that. And I'm like, yes, I do. And they're like, well, unfortunately that makes you bad for these shows. And I'm like, okay, I get that. So like, they kind of like swayed me away from these shows. Cause I was like, oh, well maybe I should just try out for this and that. They're like, no, you don't have a story. So the voice like reached out and I was like, okay, like, what do you want with me? Like, makes no sense. Like,
that is one of those things you don't believe.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, right.
What?
Yeah. What? Like, why? Like, what? Yeah. What? What do I do? So, because like I'm not, you're gonna be like, I'm really not that good of a singer. Like, there are so many much more talented people than me. But when it comes to my style, I get that. Like, okay, I can do it. But then they were like, no, we think you're gonna be a really good fit. And I was like, I don't know why, but okay. And then I got to LA, and they took us in a room and they're like, okay, this is the coach reveal. Are you ready? And I was like, I guess, yeah. And then they're like, and then I, you know, walk into the room and then it's like, John Legend. I'll tell you the story too. John Legend, blonde girl, Michael Bublé and Adam Levine. I was like, oh, it makes sense now. Michael's a coach. That's the story. I get it now. Okay. But they asked me, they're like, oh, what do you think of? And I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't know who that is. And I felt so bad because Kelsey Ballerini is one of the nicest, sweetest.
Was
like
that who it was?
It was who it was. She, I just didn't know her. I didn't know her. I didn't.
Yeah.
I'm not a country music. Like, I'm not a new country music fan. Like her audience. Like, I am not her audience.
Yeah. She's very sad. That sad girl country too.
Oh, is
Ballerini?
She?
A lot of it is.
Sad yeah. girl? Okay.
Because oh,
she's so sweet
so.
And bubbly.
Yeah.
Well, she's
yeah,
so I mean, nice. Like, she's such a kind soul. Like, I went back for the finale of our season, and she and Chase, they were still together at the time. Chase Stokes, they bought the entire bar, like tequila.
So
like,
cool.
And like, they were just so happy, and she was talking to everybody. It was such, she's so nice. I love you, Kelsey. I'm sorry that I didn't recognize you. But they're like, you know, they're like, go to each person and like start talking about them. And I was like, oh, John Legend, he's a Buckeye, he's Ohio. I love him. He's got great music. And I'm just like, I don't know who this is. And they're like, oh, Kelsey Ballerini. I was like, oh, I've heard of her name. Okay. Like, but I felt so bad. But then Michael, I was like, okay, now it makes sense. And yeah.
And so this is all happening in early 2025 that you're on The Voice.
We were filming around this time in 2024.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
And then when does the audition happen?
July of 24.
Okay. And so, but the season was when?
The season aired in 25.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
On my 32nd birthday.
TV's always so confusing. That's so cool. So yeah. So it unveils on your 32nd birthday.
Yeah,
and that's your first time.
No, my TV. And there was no guarantee that it would be my audition. Could have been, and like they could have, first of all, they could have cut it or whatever, but like
yeah.
They put it on my birthday, which was crazy.
That's sweet.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So now, but during your audition, Michael doesn't turn his chair.
Yeah.
Out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like an unwritten, interesting situation.
Yeah.
There.
I mean, you see the video and like he turned around, he was great. And like, you know, he's like, oh, Hayden, I, you know, but admittedly, like in the moment, my first thought was like, oh my God, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. Like, even though Adam turned around, I was like, that was a huge, I was like, okay, at least I have a chance. When he didn't turn around, I was just like, oh, you didn't do it. Like, you didn't do it. Like, you didn't do it. Like, you weren't good enough. Like, Adam was sitting there and I'm like, thank God I'm on Team Adam. Like, thank God, like, he turned around, gives me a chance. But in my mind, I'm like, you didn't do it. You weren't good enough for him. I was like, it was a horrible feeling for about for about 15 seconds. And I was like, you didn't do it. Like, you tried so hard and you just didn't do it. You're just not good enough. And then he turned around and then he said all that stuff.
No,
hey, I know you. Your name is Hayden.
Yes.
How do you know each other?
He came to a show a couple times.
Michael Bublé, you did not turn for this guy.
Thank God. I did not. This dude knows that I love him. He knows that I follow him on like TikTok.
Do you comment on his videos?
He does.
All right.
Yes, I do.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Here's the reason that I didn't turn my chair.
What is your excuse?
There's no excuse. I live and I breathe this music, and I have since I was a little boy. If I look back at the authenticity of this music, we didn't use vibrato. So when Hayden sang, oh, the shark babe has such teeth dear, like a pop singer.
Yeah.
But if you hear the way that those men and women sang, they didn't use vibrato. They sang always on open vowels. Everything was smooth until the end of the phrase. Now, when you hear Hayden sing a ballad, he's going to sing it that way.
Well, it worked in my favor, so I'm happy
to sing
that way.
Well, but let me just show you something.
What you didn't see is that he wanted, then he's like, okay, like, I think you should sing a different song just to show like more of your voice, because that song is a good, like, I understand that like it's a great song, but like it's not like a great song to like showcase different parts of your voice, because it's just like fast and it's like, yeah. You know.
Did he recommend something?
Yes, he recommended a song that like he and his grandpa, like that was their song. And like, so I sang it and the judges were like, okay, like that, you're right. Like that showed a lot more of your voice. Like I'm, you know, I think Kelsey said like, I regret not turning or something, whatever. And like,
yeah.
It was cool. It ended up being very cool. And, you know, we, Michael and I spoke after, and I'll keep our conversations private, but absolutely. but you know, I have no ill will at all. Like it just, I think it just was one of those things in the moment, like afterwards and like going through the, and talking with him and talking through the whole thing. Like I'm cool. Like there's no, I'm not even mad about, like, I'm not even like upset that he didn't turn anymore. Cause I get it. Yeah. I get the whole thing is all I'll say, but like, but he's been so supportive and like, just so incredible. And, I'm just so grateful for him and all the support he's given me and continues to give me. And, it's just really just a massive blessing. But yeah, that'll always be something. Like I'll always have a question in the back of my head. Like, could I have done more? Or like, was he told not to turn? Or like, was, you know, whatever. I'll sure. just always have that question. Cause I'll never ask him straight up. Like maybe one day, I don't know, maybe one day if I have 7 Christmas ales again, I'll ask him. But you know, cause it's something that happened. It was a TV show, but like real life is real life. So.
Yeah. And now, I mean, truly, yeah, to your point, real life yeah. is real life. And yeah. when you're in the pit at a concert, if you were at yeah. pit, long story short, in pits, too many pits going on here. You're pit. In Pittsburgh going on.
Yeah.
You're on the
oh,
show.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I got and, what and you're saying. I was like, yeah. wait, why is this? Okay. In yeah. pit, in the pit.
Yeah. yeah. I was like, this is too, I'm like, I'm got tripping it. Myself out. Long yes. story short, you're in Pittsburgh at yeah. his show. And for him to recognize yeah. you, call you out, give yeah. you that audience, that's authentic. That's
yeah.
real life right
yeah,
there.
Yeah. No, it was real life. It was real life. I consider myself the OG. Like he was the first, I think I'm the first person he did anything like that for.
Yeah.
And like, that's such a massive honor. And, cause he's, you know, he used to do this thing where he would go out in the crowd and he would like, you know, he would like give the people a mic and they would sing. It was a great, like, it was great for the show. Like, cause sometimes people would be really good and the crowd would be like, oh, like that was awesome. And then sometimes people would be horrible. And like, he would make like a joke of it, but like, he didn't ask me to sing. He was just like, he's good. Like, just go follow him. And yeah. like that boosted my, like, it gave me like a foundation. It was like, okay, this guy who does exactly what I love to do, like gave me his blessing basically in front of a massive audience, in front of the world, if you're talking about social media. And like, that meant more to me than anything. And like that, from that, like I never had a bad thing to say, but even, you know, there are people that have come to be like, oh, Michael really screwed you on The Voice. And I'm like, you don't get it.
Yeah, you don't
understand. Like it's no, he did not, like, at all. It, yeah. Okay. He didn't turn his chair, but like, that didn't screw me. Adam turned around and it, like, I got the chair and we've had, he's done more than enough.
So I'll play devil's advocate on that thought.
Okay.
Of the screw you. I'm going to take the opposite approach. How cool is it? You already had Bublé in your corner.
That's
so. Yeah. How cool is it then? Let's give Adam Levine his flowers. That man can sing. And you want to talk about unique, one of the most iconic voices
and for
with
him,
an incredible range ever.
And, yeah, and for him to take a chance on a dude that does nothing like what he does.
True enough.
Like a lot of his artists, like, you know, I'm not saying they're all the same, but like there's a general kind of either a rock or like a pop, like
yeah, a little R&B,
R&B,
yeah.
But like,
for sure.
he was like, no, this dude's got it. Like, I don't care what the music is. Like, I'm turning my chair. And it was so funny because the first song I ever sang on stage, I think as a solo artist before my voice changed, was She Will Be Loved. I love Maroon 5. That's why, like, dude, you know, we haven't even gotten into this yet. Like, but like, you will never be able to convince me that there isn't a God. And you'll never be able to convince me that nothing is an accident. Nothing is a coincidence. Everything is planned. Everything has like a reason and a meaning. And I loved Maroon 5 growing up. Like Songs About Jane, I played that over and over and over again. And that, like, and just like, and then I, like, you know, while half of my brain was thinking like, man, you didn't do it, the other half was like, oh my God, Adam Levine turned yeah. around. Like, that's like the guy that you like set, like first started singing a song, like that was awesome. So
gives me, I have chills
thinking. Yeah, it really, yeah. It was chill. Yeah, it was cool.
And in that God-given moment there, Hayden, you're working with Adam Levine. What yeah. were some of your big takeaways? How did you grow from working with him?
Admittedly, I don't think that I got a ton of time with him. He was very good to me and very cool, but like, honestly, I just don't think he knew enough about what I do and how I do it.
Okay.
Like, remember on the video, Michael said like, oh, I'm going to help you help him.
You're going to help him. I know he's on your team and he's going to dominate, but I'm going to help you to help him.
I love that.
Because he has everything it takes.
Everybody. Adam was super, was very nice and very kind. And like, he was like, dude, you're great. Like, you know, we did that. The one time I did get to work with him, it was before the battle, and it was Adam Levine and Kate Hudson. And like, he really was just like, we sang the song. He's like, dude, you guys sound amazing. Like, I don't know. I don't have any really points for you. Like, you sound awesome. Like, just go do that. And like, that was a great thing to hear, but also you're just like, okay, like, are you sure? Like, yeah. Are you sure we sound great? Like, you know, you're Adam Levine, like, you know, help us. But he was like, no, go do that. And that's what we did. So
I can't even fathom just being in the presence of people who are icons, of people, two people that you've really looked up to, right? And then of course, Valerie and Legend as well, who are respectfully tremendous as well.
Yeah.
And then just like doing something that you love, like that's so validating after the friction that you've experienced in your life from, do I do this? Do I not do this? And that back and forth.
It was hugely, just the biggest blessing, man. You know, my parents were there and that was a huge deal for me. Just to have them there and like to, I don't regret anything in this life because I don't think there is anything to regret. If it didn't happen, I just said, you know, nothing like mistakes. Like if it didn't happen, it's for a reason. If it did happen, it's for a reason. If you didn't do something, it's for a reason. If you did do something, it's for a reason. So I'd live my life with no regrets because I think it's all part of the plan, whatever your plan is. But if I were to go back, I wish I would have just like taken more photos and like, just like, watched my parents more. Like I was so nervous about like my own experience and like doing the song right. But like, I wish I just would have watched my parents more. Cause like, imagine them, like they're watching their kid do something that like, you know, not a lot of people get to do. And like, you know, I'm not saying that I'm like super special or anything, but like they had to feel in that moment, like we did something good.
Totally.
Like we created something good. Like we, you know, my parents and I have had, we've had a tough go of it. Like, my mental health was, you know, my anxiety, OCD, depression, like it took a toll on them. Like it was not easy. Like they really blamed themselves for a lot of it. They're like, well, what did we do wrong? Like, why don't you feel good? Or why are you so upset? And I had, and they figured out that it had nothing to do with them. Right. Like at the end of the day, it didn't, like, but in the time, you know, that's their thought is like, we messed up. Like we are the reason that he is not happy. We are the reason that he is so depressed. But then like to have that moment where like, you know, I've been lucky enough to manage my way through it. And then to have a moment like where they just get to watch me do what I love to do in like a really cool place in front of a guy that I idolize. Like it's
so first.
Yeah, it is. And I'm just like, that's, I wish I just spent more time, like just like watching them and taking in them, taking it in because they deserve that. Like they deserve more than that. I hope that I can do a lot more than just, you know, do that show. I hope that I can bring them around the world and I hope that I can, you know, take them to places like that, they, you know, that they would never imagine. Like, you know, I think that, you know, they travel on their own, but like, you know, hopefully I can do shows and do things that they can come to and just be a part of it. I think that'd be amazing.
It's part of that caring piece that we talked about in the beginning. Yeah. You really do. All of you have that great aspect about you.
Well, they did it for me. I owe it, like, I owe it to, for better or for worse, my mom's voice just plays in my head constantly. If I'm doing something that, like, nothing bad, but just, like, you know, it's just, like, my mom's voice is always just there, like, just be careful. There's, you know, and my dad's voice is just like, they're always just in there. And because I just owe so much to them and I owe them for helping me to get through what I went through and for taking me everywhere and for paying for the school that I went through to and for sacrificing, you know, sleep and hours with us and everything to do what, you know, he did. So I just owe them, what I owe them isn't money. It's not, I don't owe them money. I don't owe them a house. I owe them the effort. No matter what I'm doing, I owe them the effort to do exactly what they would hope that I would do, or to do something that I know that I need to do and to do it to the best of my ability, because they're not always right. They're like, we've had major disagreements on things, and there are things that I've been more right about than them, because I know me, they know me, but I know me too. So like, but at the end of the day, I do look back a lot and I'm like, oh, they were right about this. Oh, they're right about that. Oh, they were right about this. Oh, they're right about that. So, I would say it's probably a 75 to 25, what they're right about as compared to what I'm right about. But I do owe it to them to just at least try.
Yeah. One of those things in which you're trying that you continually are embarking upon is that mental health piece of it. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that, and some of your stories have alluded to this, that throughout your time, both in journalism and in the singing world, you've had people telling you, like, you can't do this. And obviously you are doing this. So there's been a great aspect of your growth and confidence in that mental health area. What are the skills that you employ, Hayden, to make sure that you are in a stable place mentally and able to propel yourself forward?
Yeah. And mental health is so important. It's the most important thing. Like, you can't do anything without it. You really can't. If you're in a bad place mentally, it's literally hell. I mean, I've talked about God, and I'm a Catholic, and we believe in heaven and hell, but I do have a hard time believing what hell is. I just don't have like a good grasp on what hell is. But if I can imagine hell, it's that. It's just feeling like you're not your, like feeling like completely you're not yourself, and you're just in a completely bad place. So whatever you can do to get out of that hell, you have to do it. And I'm not saying like, you know, there are things that you think are going to help, but they're just going to pull you back into the hell. But the thing is talk to people. I have two therapists and I have a psychiatrist, and I'm not ashamed to tell you that, because I need it. That's what I need. I need to talk to people a lot. I need to tell them what's going on, because that's what I need to help. Like, and again, I'm on medication. That's also something that I need for my brain. My brain doesn't produce enough serotonin. It's a biological fact. You know, sometimes we just think like, oh, well, I don't want to be on medication. And that's okay if you don't want to be on medication. But for me, that's what I need. I'm not telling anybody to go on medication. I'm just saying that if you talk to a therapist and talk to a psychiatrist, maybe that's something that they would say, hey, maybe look into this. I don't see why you at least wouldn't try. But that's the only thing, is to just, whether it's family, friends, loved ones, therapists, psychiatrists, reach out to someone, because I promise you are not alone. There are so many people who struggle with it in silence. And that's what hurts me more than anything, is that you don't have to struggle with it in silence. And it's never going to be perfect. There's always going to be things. There's people with pride. There's people with guilt. There's people with whatever. But I can promise you there's a way out. I can promise you there is help, and there is a way. There's always a way. And, you know, that's why I just keep talking about it ad nauseum, because I've had friends that I would have never guessed, just, hey, I just don't know how to do this. I'm struggling. I just don't know what to do. And I'm like, I didn't either. Just, there's so many resources here. Just start here. Just starting with me was the perfect start. And then you go from there. Mm-hmm. So I'll never be a psychiatrist. I'll never be a therapist, but I will be a conduit to that. And I will support that every time of the week. And I think where I've had trouble is being like, people have used me as a therapist, which is not something that I need to be doing, because it affects my mental health. Like, I'm not a therapist. I'm not licensed. I'm not professional. And that's something I've had to learn the hard way, is that people, you know, I want to be open for people, and I want to be there for people. And I want people to come to me and say, hey, I'm struggling, and I want to be there for them. But also, I also have to understand that I can't be that for everybody. So I have to be a conduit to be like, hey, here's a resource. Here's a resource. Here's a resource. So that's why I just continually talk about it. Like, yes, like, I'm here for you, but also like, I can't be everything for everybody, because then I'm no good, right? Like, then my mental health is bad, and then we're back in square
one. You're back at square one. Yeah. Yeah. If I'm hearing you correctly, Hayden, for our audience, if someone's going through something, step one is take the initiative, reach out to people.
Well, it's not even take the initiative. It's bravery. A lot of the times, because a lot of the times it's just like, or it's just like, not even bravery. It's just like, I don't know. Like, I just don't know. What do I do? So, yeah, if you're feeling bad, yeah, I think brave, just take that step. Mm-hmm. Even initiative is probably a good word. I don't know why it was like, no, but yeah, initiative, just take that first step. It doesn't have to be a family member. It doesn't even have to be even if it's just somebody you like to talk to online, like even like a Twitter friend or whatever. Just like, hey, like I'm kind of struggling. Like eventually, even if that's not the right person, I think eventually somewhere along the line, you just keep doing it, you'll get put in the right direction.
Because as with anything, when you do start placing your efforts towards a goal, the things start to align.
Right.
Life starts to align towards it.
Right. And it's when you avoid it is when, you know.
100%. Yeah. I think it kind of calls into mind too that the flip side of it, that we could be that for people too, yeah. Right? Like that value of checking in on others and making sure that people are doing well on the straight and narrow and okay.
Yeah. Honestly, I think that's why I try to post a lot on social media because I just want to assure people that like, hey, I'm doing okay. Like, you know, like without like, cause I don't know, for whatever reason, I just, like, when people check in on me, like I feel guilty. Like, what are you checking on me for? There's a million other people that need help. Why do you check on me? But like, you know, my parents is different. I talk to them, but you know, but yeah, I'm like, and I try to be transparent. If I'm not doing okay, then I'll be like, hey, I'm kind of struggling this week, but I'm okay. Like, but I have things in place. Like I said, I have my therapist, I have my psychiatrist, I have my parents. Mm-hmm. I'm lucky to have that support system. So at the end of the day, I'm lucky enough to fall back on them and I have my faith, you know, that's huge. So, yeah, I try to just assure people like, hey, I'm doing all right. Let's focus on the people who aren't. And if I'm not, then I go to my people, you know, my support system.
I think it's a whole picture situation. Might just make a quick note here too. It is like 100 degrees in this room.
Yeah,
there's a fly buzzing around and Hayden's here rocking it and killing it. I mean, I am grateful. We had a light overheat here. Like Hayden's here rocking it and killing it. So thank you so much for being here and just thanks for your energy. Like it just shows again, the care that you bring.
I wore the suit for you guys. No, I did not. Yeah. I'm supposed to be at a shoot in 2 minutes, but they're going to have to wait. It's okay.
We're almost going to have to wrap this up here and we'll get moving for you here in a second here. One of the aspects I wanted to touch on real quick was kind of, again, what I was going to tangent with was this whole picture notion that I think once you're in an environment that's really good for you, so then you tend to do well in congruence with it. And what I was getting at is you're singing, you're doing something that you love, and I think you're all in on it, right? Which seems like you're all in on it, which is great. Like it doesn't seem like there's a sense of unease. That's massive. You're in Cleveland, and this is where I was going to go with it. You're so openly ambitious, optimistic, supportive of Cleveland.
Yeah.
Why Cleveland?
Honestly, I just, again, divine. It's divine intervention because divine intervention, but my grandpa was born and raised here and just brainwashed the absolute crap out of me, man. Just brainwashed me from the time I was literally an infant. Like I see photos of me as an infant, like a Browns onesie and an Indians onesie. And like, you know, I grew up watching the 90s Tribe and I grew up, you know, coming here for holidays. And I just felt, it literally just felt like, you know, imagine like, you know, in my opinion, the holidays are the best time of the year, whether it's July 4th, whether it's Christmas. I think Christmas is the best holiday, but that's just me. But like when you come up here for the best times of year, you're happy.
Yeah.
You're just happy. So like, I was just always happy here. And I'm like, that's my happy place. Like people didn't get it. They're like, yeah, your mom's from there, but like you live in Fort Lauderdale, freaking Florida. How could this? And I'm just like, this just isn't my place. Like I love my friends a lot. Like I miss them. I was just telling you earlier, we have like a group chat of like, you know, 12 of us. We talk every day. Like my best friends in the world are still down there and they always will be. But like, it's just this is just where I need to be. I literally wrote it in that song, my home. It's like, you know, God placed inside of me a different place I was called to be, because this is where I want to be. Even if I, one day I would love to, you know, spend time in LA, and one day I would love to be able to travel, you know, around the world and sing. But like, I would always love to have a little spot here because it's just my happy place. Like, it reminds me a little bit of LeBron. Like, I know we're going through LeBron watch and I'm super excited about that, but like, he always just, even if he's, you know, I totally get you got to move away from home. I did it. I haven't lived in home in 15 years, but like, I still love visiting home. But like, same with LeBron, it's like, he always just, there's always something here. And like, for me, I'm not from here. I wasn't born here, raised here, but like, this is my happy place and I love it. The people are amazing. The food is amazing. We have such culture here in Cleveland. I lived in Columbus when I was at Ohio State. They do not have half the culture we have. I'm not trying to hate on Columbus, but Columbus does not have half the culture that Cleveland has. You know, we have our sports teams. We're the rock and roll. We have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We need to become more of a music city. That's my only thing. we have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and we're not like known as a music city. Like, we should be like Nashville. Nashville's music city. We should be same kind of thing. If we have the Rock Hall, like, enough of like, I love LA too. I spent time in LA. I love LA. If I were ever to move like on a semi-permanent basis, LA would be it for me. I just really like LA. But like, we have the Rock, like Cleveland.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We need it needs to be more of a music city. Anyway,
I'm all in on that.
That's the only my only complaint. Other than that, it's beautiful. I love it. Even the winter, which is tough.
You got to get them all. You get all the seasons. You get everything. All these great aspects that you just talked about. For the sake of brevity, too, while you're out touring and you're doing all of these shows, over 200 a year, I mean, this is an astronomical pace you're working on.
Yeah.
How do you recharge and how do you stay fresh? Because so often people who transition their hobby into their work, for example, your singing was a hobby. It turned into your work. Burn out on it. Feel less joyful in doing it.
Yeah.
How do you stay fresh?
I think a couple things. I think one, I just really, truly love the music. Like, you ask a baseball player, they do the same thing every day. They hit, you know, it's different every day because you're in a different state of mind. You're playing in a different place, but like, it's the same every day. It's still the white ball. It's still, you're still trying to hit it or you're still trying to throw it. And you have to love it if you do that. And I truly love the music. I'll never get sick of singing the songs I sing. So that's it. That's one. Two, I do sleep a lot. I sleep a lot. Like if I get home, like, or I rest a lot. I shouldn't say, I don't know. Like, I'm just, when I'm my daytimes are kind of free. So like, if I'll go work out, but then I'll just rest. I'll just kind of like, you know, listen to a podcast, or like, you know, or just hang out at a coffee shop, or just kind of like just low key. So that's really it. There's really not a whole lot to it. Sometimes I'm not fresh. Sometimes I'm worn out, but like, it goes back to my love for it. I love it that much.
Living it out now.
Yeah.
Let's say 10-year-old Hayden sitting right behind the camera.
Yeah.
He's here. He's anxious. He's uneasy. He's kind of going back and forth. He's just diving into the singing lessons.
Yeah.
He's excited about it.
Yeah.
What would you tell 10-year-old Hayden if you were sitting in the room right
now? I'd tell him, oh, it's going to be tough, but you're going to do it. You're going to do everything you want to do, buddy. Except there's the one thing, and that's a whole nother podcast. I really love to be a husband and a father. That's my ultimate dream, the ultimate goal. We're not there yet, little guy, but hopefully we'll get there one day. We have faith that God will take us in that direction, but everything else, just keep doing what you're doing. Like, just, you know, you're going to love it. You're going to be so blessed, and just have faith. You'll get through it somehow, some way, but you'll get through it.
It wasn't always better than you imagined too, in different ways.
Yeah. I mean, like, some things were so much better than I imagined.
Yeah.
Way better. Like all this Bublé stuff.
Right.
I was like, oh, maybe we'll get to sing on stage with them one time. I was like, that would be the dream. Look at what happened. Literally. Cavs winning a title. I'm like, oh, maybe that with LeBron back, coming back after like.
While you're there.
Yeah. Right. Like while I'm there. But also like when he came to Miami, I was mad because like that was the team I hated the most because all my friends were Heat fans. And I was like, Dwayne Wade stinks. I hate the Heat. And LeBron was like, I'm taking my talent to South Beach. I lost it. I was a senior in high school. I lost it. My mental health was so bad, but I lost it. I was like, oh. So like, I was like, but like when he came back, it was way better than I could have ever imagined. So like even the littlest stuff like that, or like the mental health thing, like Kevin Love, you know, being able to talk with him about it and, you know, we don't have much of a relationship, but like just that mutual respect, like, hey, like, we've spoken about it, and it's just, you know, we're always going to kind of be tied into that. So just little things, man, it's always way better than you think.
Final question. We'll dive into our closing litany to keep this thing moving for you. What's the end game for you, Hayden, in all of this? Husband and father.
My dream would be, as I mentioned, to do this full time, to travel around the world, to sing with a big band every time I do it, and to have a place in Cleveland and LA. I think that would be my dream, and maybe even Florida if I could afford it. But at the end of the day, my dream is just to take every day and be as grateful as I can be for what I have that day. And, and I pray that, you know, I hate to get morbid, but we're all going to be gone one day. So I just pray I get into heaven, man. I pray that God forgives me and lets me in. I'm going to try my best. And I know that sometimes it's not about trying, but that's the goal. Life is short, but eternity is a long time.
It is a long time. We're all just walking each other home. It's one of my favorite sayings.
Amen. Amen.
It ties directly into it. My first question is rooted in gratitude. I think one of the best ways in which we can help walk each other home is, and to live a better life, is to practice gratitude.
Yeah.
What role does gratitude play in your life?
Literally everything. Literally everything. I am so grateful for every little bad thing and every little good thing. Like, it's literally everything in my life. I've learned over the years that, like, nothing is as good or as bad as it seems. Like, even the things that are way better, like, it's still not, it doesn't fulfill you the way you think it will. But, or some things won't fulfill you the way that you think they will. But other things will fulfill you way more than you think they will. So I think gratitude is the biggest thing. And it's also the hardest thing. It's the hardest thing in the world. Because when I'm feeling great, like when I'm feeling mentally great and physically great, all I want is more. I'm doing great. I'm feeling great. Like, okay, like what can I do better? Like, what can I get? What can I, you know, do better and try more? And, you know, how can I make more money? And how can I be more comfortable? And how can I, you know, get a girl to like me? Or how can I, you know, find the right person or whatever? Like, but then I'm like, you're living your dream. God has given you everything. You are healthy. You have gotten through so much crap. You can breathe. You're not in pain. You live in the most beautiful place that you want to live in, your happy place. Like, just be grateful for that. Just be grateful for that. You just got to be grateful for the things of that day. Because if you're not, then you get lost in that spiral. And then it just all goes to hell.
It does all go to hell. Yeah.
That's what happens when you're not grateful.
That Oprah notion, right? Like, it's the gratitude for what you have will amplify.
Yeah.
Second question. I know you kind of touched on it already. Do you have any regrets in your life? And if no regrets?
Zero. I know that sounds like cocky, but it's not cocky. It's that it's not my life. It's God's plan for my life. So like, I'm going to make mistakes. Like, my relationship with God is very like one-on-one. Like, we've always had, since I was 4 years old, my grandma passed. I didn't know what death was, but my dad taught me to pray. And since that, literally, I remember that night that he taught me to pray. And since that night, I have not prayed one day. And I have not talked to God every single day since that night. And it's always just been a very one-on-one relationship. So like, so it's not that, it's just that I trust him. So if I do something wrong, because right and wrong are relative, right? So if I do something wrong or something doesn't work out because of a decision I made, it's a learning experience. It's not a mistake. It's a learning experience. It's something that needed to happen. And if I do something good, then that's also like, you know, also just part of his plan. So, I live with zero regrets. I don't regret anything.
It ties directly into that gratitude piece. So yeah, I'm with you.
No, it can sound cocky, like, oh, you know, regrets. Like, I just don't have any.
Third question for you.
Yeah.
What's on your calendar that you're looking forward to? Creates an excitement in your life.
Creates excitement. This shoot is going to be fun. I'm
like, I gotta go.
Yeah, I do have to go. I feel really bad. But this has been awesome and amazing. So I don't regret it. See, that's good. I have a new single coming out, and it's going to be out later in July, and we're doing the shoot for it today. We're going to do a photo shoot and video shoot. It's a cover of an old song that is not covered often. And I did it with one of Michael Bublé's arrangers, who he's done a lot of work with, but he's just an incredible, incredible, my favorite arranger for sure in the world. And like, to be able to work with him and for him to say yes to work with me was amazing. So I'm really, 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 really excited about this. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Do you want to drop the name?
Not yet.
We're looking forward to it.
Yeah,
we're all excited to hear this. Absolutely.
Yeah, it'll give people a little intrigue. Yeah,
I like thank that. You. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just keep just dangling the fruit, right?
Carrot.
Fourth question for you. When you lay down each night and you're reflecting on the day that you just had, what is it that you hoped to have brought to the world that day?
Joy, love, peace. Yeah, that's really it. I mean, every day I'm just like, every day I pray like, help me to be the best human being that I can be, whatever it is. So I just hope I bring joy and peace and love. And I hope I bring that to somebody who needs it. I get so lost in like, sometimes, you know, when I do a lot of gigs where it's not super crowded or not super fruitful. And I'm like, what am I doing this for? But then, you know, you remember that one person really loved you and really loved what you did. And you get a note that was like, oh, you made my day. So like that's what I do it for. And like, just, but also just in personal relationships, like, you know, I just hope that like people go to bed like, wow, like he, that was awesome what he did. And I'm grateful for that. Or just like, oh, he made me feel happy. Like people, another Michael quote, people are, this is not a Michael quote, but it's something he said often. People will never remember you for what you did. They'll always remember you for how you made them feel.
Yeah.
That's really it.
My Angela.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There you go. Perfect. I, of course, that's my life is like, oh no, Maya Angelou, one of the greatest poets said it. No, but Michael said it. So I listened to it. That's, yeah. That's what I listened to. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you though. It is, you're again, one of those people that does radiate such goodness.
I'd try.
Yeah. You do. You do. You try and do well and you care.
Yeah.
If you had any closing fifth question, piece of advice you would give to the audience as a whole or a specific sector of the audience, final question, what would your closing thoughts be?
Just go spread love. Just life's too short. Just love people. Love people. Like give them joy and give them comfort and give them care. Care about people. That's what I would say. Just care about people. Care about yourself. Sure. Make sure that you're good. You're number one, right? Like it's your responsibility to make sure that you're good, but also just when you're good, then it's time to care about other people. So just care about other people. It'll go a long way.
Hayden Grove is one of those people who cares about those around him, as you can tell through this conversation. So I really appreciate you taking the time and the care.
My pleasure, man.
The time and the care to be here with me.
This is you, like, not that I wasn't going to be happy and impressed, but like, this is the most impressed I've ever been on a podcast. So
thank you.
God bless you, man. Yeah, you do it right and you do your homework. So God bless, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, all of Hayden and my links will be in the description below or in the pinned comment if you are on YouTube. I can't thank you enough for tuning in. If you haven't hit the subscribe button, again, I don't know what you're waiting for. We just keep delivering you these top tier conversations and diving into the mindsets of the great people that are around us, like Hayden Grove, who was our guest on episode 80 of Chats with Clark. I'm your host, Joe Clark, signing off. Until next time, thanks for listening.